So we have two letters to the Corinthians in the New Testament, and really scholars believe that there might be multiple different letters involved, especially in the 2 Corinthians piece. But what we know this is correspondence back and forth between Paul and, in the case of what we're looking at today, Paul and Timothy and the church at Corinth. We don't have the stuff that the church at Corinth wrote to Paul, but we have Paul's responses and Paul's instructions and Paul's frustrations. And it's some of those frustrations that we see coming out in what was read for today. Paul seems to be saying to the folks at Corinth that it's not all about Paul. It's not all about Timothy. He says, it's not ours, but it comes through us from somebody else. The things that Paul has said to them, the ministry that Paul and Timothy are working with them, are not from them alone, but from God through Christ. So Paul shares with them some frustration. He seems to know that they're also frustrated, but he talks about being afflicted and oppressed and perplexed and constantly under some sense of impending doom and harm, and yet it doesn't destroy him because he knows it's not just about him, but that it's about God and God's glory. And that's moving through him. Talks about believing, trusting, and therefore being able to speak. Sometimes it's hard to believe in our own lives, isn't it? It's hard to trust that something greater than us is working through us or the others around us. Sometimes it seems like we're alone, we're frail, kind of like a clay jar. An old, cracked, maybe well-used or overused clay jar. And we look around and we see that there's conflict and there are questions. And we wonder, how much do we believe that there's more than this? And what risks will we take to speak? After all, isn't it true, opening your mouth sometimes only brings trouble? Why should I bother to speak the truth that I know or the truth that I see or the truth that I have to offer if someone might just stomp on it, if someone might crush my clay jar? Well, if I don't trust that there's something beyond me, if I don't trust that that truth is real and powerful and, yes, even cosmic, I definitely might be tempted to stay silent. And yet, over the years, decade by decade, century by century, over the millennia, followers of Christ, people of God, have opened their mouths to speak. They speak from these clay jars in which they have lived, and yet they offer something more than that, something cosmic, something full, something divine. It's the eternal flowing through the temporal. It's not just about the clay jar, but it's about that glory of God that somehow breaks through. Every year, our family on Christmas Eve watches It's a Wonderful Life. I don't know that we can have Christmas Eve without watching It's a Wonderful Life. We come to church here, 5:30 or so, and then we go home. There are certain things that we eat, and we always watch It's a Wonderful Life. Then we come back to church here, and we've done that no matter where we've served over the last many decades. One of my favorite parts of It's a Wonderful Life is when George is at Mary Hatch's house, and not sure what's going on, and George and Mary don't seem like they're going to be getting along very well. George is sort of not ready, not willing. But Mary, for some reason, thinks George likes her. Where did she get that idea? Well, they had a strange first date. And there's a little something that happened during that. Here's the exchange. You may remember this. What do you want, Mary? You want the moon? If you want it, I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down for you. Hey, that's a pretty good idea. I'll give you the moon, Mary. Well, I'll take it. Then what? Well, then you can swallow it. It'll all dissolve, see? And the moonbeams will shoot out of your fingers and your toes and the ends of your hair. Am I talking too much? Yeah, go ahead and kiss her, is what the guy yells from the neighborhood. But I've been thinking about the moon. Paul's got this treasure in a clay jar. He says, we're people, and we're walking around, and we're afflicted, and we're oppressed, and we're perplexed, but there's something else going on. There's this glory inside of us. We really believe it, and I imagine that Paul's talking about something like pulling down the moon. George lassos the moon and swallowing it, and it'll all dissolve, and the moonbeams come shooting out. I'm sure Paul was not talking about something quite so visually spectacular. But what he was saying is, this gospel we have, this message we've received is real and cosmic and bigger and more powerful than we are. And now it lives inside of us and has to get out of us. It's God's glory coming to us through Jesus Christ. And it's difficult because we're still in these clay jars. Life is tough. It's a rough and tumble world out there. Nobody wants to hear everything we have to say. And some days it seems like everyone wants to avoid anything that we say. Paul seems to be standing up for himself and Timothy and others who might share the gospel by saying, we had to tell you, we had to live this way. Because it's not just us, it's Christ in us. It's God's glory moving through us. And so Paul says, we believe and so we speak. In a lot of translations of the Bible, we believe and so we speak, Paul sets up as a quotation of sorts. He's getting it from somewhere. It looks like he's probably getting it from Psalm 116, verse 10. But it would make sense to me if he was getting it from there. And here's the reason. Remember, the Psalms seem to be kind of the songbook and maybe even the journal of the early Israelites as they participated in worship. And some of them are attributed specifically to David. And so you can imagine this is sort of the journal or songbook of one person. And frankly, even though David was a king, he had an interesting life, and it sounds like he wasn't happy with the things that happened to him all of the time. Here is Psalm 116, and it's called, in the version I'm reading, a thanksgiving for recovery from illness. So that's nice. I've loved the Lord because he had heard my voice and my supplications. Because God inclined God's ear to me, therefore I will call on God as long as I live. Even though things happen to this clay jar, even though there's a world out there, I will always call on God. Because God listens. God is there. The snares of death encompassed me. The pangs of Sheol laid hold on me. I suffered distress and anguish. Then I called on the name of the Lord. Oh Lord, I pray, save my life. Gracious is the Lord and righteous. Our God is merciful. The Lord protects the simple. When I was brought low, God saved me. Return, my soul, to your rest, for the Lord has dealt bountifully with you. For you have delivered my soul from death, my eyes from tears, my feet from stumbling. I walk before the Lord in the land of the living. I believed, and I said, I am greatly afflicted. I said in my consternation, everyone is a liar. What shall I return to the Lord for all this bounty to me? I will lift up the cup of salvation and call on the name of the Lord. I'll pay my vows to the Lord in the presence of all God's temple. Times were bad for me, writes the psalmist. I was laid low. I was trampled down. I felt like other people weren't for me and didn't believe me, yet I believed, and so I spoke out to God in that moment of belief, and lo and behold, God heard me. God was with me. Paul was speaking to the people at Corinth and saying, there are disputes, there are issues, there are questions, there are difficulties, and yet because we are carrying with us the glory of God that we know through Jesus Christ, we must speak. And we expect that tough things are going to happen. After all, we are living in these clay jars. We are earthlings. But we know we've got to live another way. Paul puts that sense of clay jar and mortality together with that sense of glory and eternity as he talks about carrying around inside ourselves the death of Christ, the mortality, the suffering, the affliction, so that we can also experience his resurrection, the life of Christ, the immortality, the divine, the eternal. It's a mixed bag, this clay jar, and a mixed metaphor, that. There's a lot going on there as we think about that. And why wouldn't there be? Isn't it hard to go through every single day thinking only cosmic thoughts, thinking only eternal thoughts? Very difficult. I've mentioned this before, again, from It's a Wonderful Life. George talking to an angel. An angel said, oh, we don't have money in heaven. And George replying, it comes in pretty handy around here, bub. Well, the eternal sounds so wonderful, so light-filled, so cosmic, so incredible. But we live our lives in the real world of sickness and pain and anguish, the real world of destruction and war, of racism, of oppression. Will we speak? If we believe that we are carrying around with us a sense of, an experience with, the presence of God through Jesus Christ, it seems to me we need to follow Paul and Timothy and so many others, and that even though we live in these frail clay jars, we must speak the truth we know. We must represent the God that we know loves us and claims us. We must, even though we bear in our bodies the death of Christ, bear forth into the world Christ's resurrection. It's dangerous. It's dangerous to say what we know, to say to the world there is another way. A way that speaks of unity, not division. A way that speaks of peace, not of war. A way that speaks of compassion, not hatred. A way that speaks of the eternal, not only the mundane, the temporal. Paul and Timothy spoke that way. The psalmist seemed to have spoken that way, and yet not everyone around them bought into it. They didn't believe it. Why should we listen to you? You're just another clay jar just like us. Why should we listen to you? The things that you're saying make us change what we're doing. Why should we listen to you? The things you have to say are threatening to our way of life. I guess Paul and Timothy had a choice, the same choice that we have. We could decide not to speak, not to speak with our mouths, not to speak with our hands and feet, not to speak with our lives and relationships about that thing that we say we believe. That's always a choice. But what we hear here in 2 Corinthians is, since we believe, we spoke. If your belief that there is a God of love, that that God redeems the world, that that God comes to us through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, and that that God calls us to reach out to the world in love. If you really believe that, if I really believe that, mustn't I also speak it? Mustn't I also live it? Mustn't I also risk even life and limb that that might be known in the world? Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a theologian during the Second World War and before, wrote a book once called The Cost of Discipleship. And in it, he talked about what it meant to be a follower of Jesus Christ and what that looked like. In fact, during Nazi Germany, he spoke out against the Nazi regime. He even participated in a plot to end the Nazi regime by killing Adolf Hitler. But he was part of a theological education collective and a partnership of church people and others because he believed, therefore he spoke. Discipleship was costly because it required something of us, he said. He was arrested. He was imprisoned. And he was executed just a tiny bit before the end of the war, before the Allies came and freed the other prisoners. He gave his life because of what he believed. That's one person in one century who gave his life because of what he believed, who wrote a book, and whose name is known. There are other names that we know of people who have given their lives to what they believe, sometimes unto death, sometimes through difficulty. But there are so many. Some are in this room. Many are in our memories. Men and women and children who realize that even though they live in clay jars, that something greater, the glory of God, resides in and through them in their experience of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Do you believe? Is the first question Paul seems to imply. Will you speak? Is the second question. Knowing that your jar is clay, knowing that you are mortal, knowing that is frightening, do you believe, we're being asked? Will you speak? If I believe that even here in this earthly existence, there's something of God's glory that calls out to us and moves through us, if I really believe that, I can't help but open my mouth. I can't help but open my hands. Maybe it'll be like the moonbeams that Mary swallows in George's example. Maybe I'll swallow it. I'll realize that that glory of God is in me and it'll shoot out of my fingers and my toes and out of all of my... Well, you know what I mean. The ends of Mary's hair and yours. If you believe, will you speak? As people of God surrounded by godlessness, as people of God surrounded by hatred, fear, discrimination, segregation, war, punishment, imprisonment, prejudice, will we speak? God offers us power and promise to say and do words and deeds of God's glory so that even us, even those of us who are here in this place in these clay jars, those who believe will speak, will act, and still hope in the name of Jesus Christ. And for that, thanks be to God. Amen.